AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business. Hello, and welcome to this cereals and oilseeds episode of the AHDB podcast. I'm Tom Hebert. This month, we're looking at what we can learn from the USA about regenerative agriculture. Regenerative, or as it's sometimes known, conservation agriculture, comprises a number of principles and practices aiming to improve soil health, increase biodiversity, and nurture resilient crops in an environmentally sustainable way. A growing number of farmers around the UK are enthusiastically embracing the practice and overhauling their farming systems. One of those people is East Anglian grower Russell McKenzie. Keen to learn more and expand his knowledge, Russell recently jetted off to the States to attend an event run by No Till on the Plains, a charity helping farmers to work with nature. AHDB's Knowledge Exchange Manager, Harry Henderson, who also attended the event, caught up with Russell to discuss what he learned.
Harry Henderson. I'm a knowledge exchange manager for cereals and oilseeds at the AHDB. And the first thing I'd like to start with is a mission statement from one of the speakers of the conference that we're going to be talking about. And it is to produce crops that are inherently resistant to possible infections by insects, bacteria, fungi, nematodes and viruses, eliminating the need for pesticides. Produce food that can regenerate public health with an elevated content of immune compounds that transfer plant immunity to livestock and people, providing food as medicine. Rapidly sequester carbon, build soil organic matter much faster than commonly expected. Restore hydrological cycles, cool the climate, reduce water requirements of the crop. All of these benefits and more can be achieved by simply managing the soils and crops differently in a manner that enhances rather than suppresses biological function. It is my mission to have these regenerative models of agricultural management become mainstream globally by 2040. So that mission statement was from John Kemp. He was one of the speakers at the No Till on the Plains conference. And that was the thing that really made me stand up or sit up and think, well, this is worth listening to. And this is a whole lot more than no-till farming. So with that, I have with me Russ McKenzie, farm manager in Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire, I think. And he accompanied me and a couple of other guys from the UK on this on this conference to Wichita, Kansas in January. So, hello, Russ. Are you there?
Yeah, morning, Harry. Yeah, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire, you're right there. So we straddle both counties.
Fantastic. I thought of one and then thought of the other, but I'm glad you said that. That's good. So, Russ, it was you really that identified this conference as the conference to go to in terms of reducing soil movement. What made it stand out for you?
Well, I've been seeing over the past couple of years various people going over to the States to these sort of no-till conferences. There's quite a few of them around, and it's just a question of which one was the best one to go to. And having spoken to two or three different people, this seems to be the one that, so if you're going to go to one, the No-Till on the Plains one was the best one to go to.
Yeah. No, it was an eye-opener for sure. And ahead of the event, before you got there, what were your expectations of the event?
Well, we've been quite lucky. We've had grounds well over here in the UK, which has been a really big breakthrough event for regenerative agriculture. And I thought, well, you know, perhaps going over there, it's going to increase my knowledge, a good chance to network with some really adaptive thinkers, come back with some new thinking and new ideas. You know, what can we embrace? What are people doing over there that's different to what we're doing? And I think it certainly fulfilled all those expectations and more by a long way.
And if you were able to pick three things, three standout things that you picked up at the conference, what would those three be?
Well, I mean, I think, and you'll know as well as I did it, it's a packed conference, but in a good way, because every speaker was slightly different. You learned a lot. But mycorrhizal fungi is something that was, you know, I've heard a lot about over the past couple of years, and probably not quite got my head around it fully. We're quite fortunate on that first day. A guy called Michael Phillips was speaking about mycorrhizal fungi and its association with roots, and he explained it in a really, really good way about all the different species. You know, the fact that they actually reach out within the soil to try and scavenge more. So the whole association that the mycorrhizal roots have in terms of what they do with the soil and the relationship with the plant is pretty key, and how some of them actually have a very close relationship to various types of wood species. And then I started to probably understand in my own head why people are doing agroforestry. Suddenly those sort of things start to make a lot more sense. So that was one thing which was a brilliant start to it. The other thing, and echoing what you mentioned about John Kemp, he was talking about plant health being quite a key driver in soil health as well. So getting plant health right is pretty key. And again, focusing on his biology and what he was talking about, that if you get the biology wrong, then it's, or basically if you don't get the plant health right, or the biology's wrong, your plant health crashes off the back of it. But his view is that biology will trump chemistry. So in line with what he was talking about at the start of that conference. And I think the other thing as well, which really stood out for me, was on one of the guys who was speaking was talking about this link with food manufacturers. And so actually physically promoting regenerative agriculture on the labelling on, you know, some foods, be it cereals or whatever. I thought it was a really good way to get a message across about what people are doing on farms. But you've got that closer link to food as well. So, I mean, there's so many bits you could pick out, but they are probably sort of two or three of my highlights.
And bringing it back to the UK then, if we were able to adopt it in the UK, what would it take? What would it make it mainstream?
Well, there's a huge momentum. Yeah, there's some people doing some brilliant stuff already, you know, in all sorts of different parts of the UK. There's a thirst for knowledge. I think the great thing about it is a lot of it is farmer-led, in terms of, you know, farmers, you know, talking to other farmers, wanting to learn what other people are doing, being quite open about what they're doing. So, and I think obviously there's people already down that road. I think the other key bit with it as well, and so from my point of view, is you need to be pretty open-minded. Something that one of the speakers mentioned who was doing a brilliant job is that you probably have to accept mistakes. And if you're not making mistakes, then you're probably not trying hard enough, which I thought was quite a good way of putting it across, actually. Is that sometimes we all, even now, learn by our mistakes. That's how you learn, that's how you progress. So I think understanding that, yeah, things aren't going to be easy straight off, but it's just being prepared to learn, adapt, and just go and give stuff a try. And I think that was a refreshing thing for me. What a lot of those guys were doing was, you know, really, really forward thinking, but exciting at the same time as well. So we certainly saw with, you know, what one guy was doing on potatoes was really quite something different.
Yeah, and it didn't seem to be accepting too much risk in their business. It was feeling their way as they went and learning as they went, but they weren't really risking the income of the farmers as they developed the strategy for regen ag going forwards, I guess.
No, I think that's always the biggest concern for people is, you know, naturally it is the bottom line, you know, is what impacts is that going to have. But I think as we're seeing things change in farming now in terms of what we have coming out of the chemical bundle is getting less, getting more restrictive. So the thinking is definitely changing in terms of, you know, what can we do differently on farm that we can enhance, not only the environment, but in terms of what we can achieve with doing less. But no, you're right. I think those guys were trying different things, but ultimately not risking their business and were generating better profits.
From an HDB point of view, how could HDB get involved and support the interest?
Well, I think this is a pretty great opportunity. I mean, I know I sit on the Cereals and Oilseeds board, but I think this is a good chance to maybe actually do a bit of a dedicated longer term research into it. And I think the difficult bit with a lot of this is you can't see an instant result sometimes in a project that only lasts for a year or maybe 2 years. Some of this stuff is once you get to years 4 and 5. You start to then see the real improvement. So I think it's a good opportunity here to maybe start fresh and look at stuff that people are doing differently. You've got a chance to look at farms where they're at different stages of the process, so you've got lots of information. I think the key bit here is not revisiting old data. Yeah. You know, looking back at older data is, we had that with the looking at, you know, is there a nitrogen requirement for the RB209 for direct drilled cereals in the autumn? And that was revisiting old data, but it also wasn't from this country. So a bit of fresh thinking, and I think the HDB would be in a good position to put that forward with the knowledge exchange network that you have.
If the government would like to help, if ELMS would come into play and the new British agricultural policy, is that an important aspect to support this as well?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it would. You look at it, and I think it's a very good topical point. I mean, there's been lots of discussion about, you know, in terms of what's going on with farms. I mean, it's quite ironic in light of where we've been recently. A lot of the emissions and CO2 has levelled quite highly towards agriculture. I do find it quite ironic that since, obviously, the lockdowns we had across the various parts of the world, you know, the planes have stopped flying, road transport's a bit lower, the CO2 levels have dropped considerably, but the cows haven't got any less. So there's all those sort of bits of it. I think it's quite key. There's a good message to have out there in terms of, you know, what you can do in terms of, be it, you know, capturing CO2, enhancing the environment, all those bits there. I think if there's a better understanding generally by people from government, I mean, I think it really needs to be have a good network, you know, not with, you know, people who are not directly involved with farms. I mean, you need to have a good voice there as well. But I think, you know, having experience of what people are doing on farm who are doing regenerative agriculture and doing it really well would send quite a powerful message. And I think they would, you know, they'd get a good understanding of what people are trying to achieve and what they are achieving.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you've mentioned it already, but the consumer, is the consumer, or could the consumer be brought into this, into Regen Ag as a way of them supporting better agricultural processes and better environmental protection?
Well, I thought that was a really good, powerful message in terms of, you know, what they were talking about at that particular presentation. And yeah, my immediate thoughts were, you know, if you approached a food manufacturer in the UK or if you spoke to a supermarket and asked them the question, how are you supporting regenerative agriculture or what do you understand about it? I'm not sure they would understand what it was, but I think it would be a good message in terms of, you know, in terms of, you know, there's all this talk about food at the moment in terms of being self-sufficient, et cetera, et cetera, and more understanding where our food comes from. That actually, if you've got a product that says, you know, this comes from a regenerative source, yeah, that name in itself, I think, is quite a powerful message. We certainly saw it over there. They've got that sort of link with a flour mill over there. And it's a long process in that particular one. But I thought that was not quite a revelation, but I thought actually that's a really good step to say to promoting, you know, what people are doing on farm, you know, sort of not as well, but better, and getting a bigger audience to see what people are doing.
And in terms of environmental concerns, Regen Agriculture could be a key player in this, do you think?
I think without doubt. I mean, you know, thinking back to what we saw with that potato grower who was putting in his sort of his companion crops with potatoes. I mean, that was, you know, that was something else really, to be honest. But his thought process with it, by encouraging beneficial insects and then having flower margins, not just from, you know, right on the edge of the field, but within fields as well, to encourage beneficial insects. We know with cover crops we can catch nutrients, but anything that's going to enhance pollinators and something like that as well, I think it's a great message. It certainly made me think a lot more about what we could do and maybe being a bit more sort of daring in terms of what we could try as well. So I think it's a good message.
For a grower that's considering moving towards lower imports, lower impact even agriculture, what three pointers would you give to a grower in the UK?
Well, I think it's, you know, it probably comes back to maybe a little bit of what I said earlier on. It's, you know, being prepared to experiment is one of the things, you know, trying sort of things on a small scale and then finding what works and then expanding from there. I think if your soil is in a good condition to start with, I think you've got a couple of rungs up the stepping ladder, but it's not a silver bullet on its own. I don't think if you've got compacted soil, you can expect some no-till and cover crops to do everything for you overnight. And I think that's a challenge of understanding where your fields are. It doesn't have to be expensive. You can try small areas. You know, people are very adaptive these days. You don't have to go and buy the most expensive drill on the market. You don't have to buy the newest drill on the market. You can do it at a reasonable cost. And, you know, it's thinking outside the box. And I think that's the thing I found really refreshing from their conference, that guys really, really pushing the boundaries in terms of what they're doing. I mean, some of the stuff I don't think we could probably quite embrace over here. But when you see people doing this sort of relay cropping where they've got they're harvesting one crop, but underneath it, they've got another one growing through that they're then going to harvest afterwards. I mean, I'd love to do something like that. I'm not sure we've got quite the climate to do it with everything, but just being prepared to give it a go. And you've got to be more patient than a year. I think you do sometimes hear where people say, well, I tried that 1 year, it was no good. But I think it's understanding it's a long-term gain. You talk to people who are, you know, some way down the line now, who are at least 5 years or even longer, and they say, I wouldn't go back, and I'm glad I did what I did. I think I sort of, when I first started looking at sort of no-till and then other people talking about regenerative agriculture, I think as a slogan, I mean, we're talking about conservation ag, but I think regenerative does make you look at things slightly differently and understand what you're trying to do. So, and I know there was one of the speakers there who's a farmer, and he was speaking. He said, well, actually, you can rejuvenate any sort of regenerate anything. So I think from the message I probably took from that nothing's impossible. I mean, everyone's got difficult parcels of land, and some bits may take longer than others, but I think that was the thing, is that ultimately you can improve anything, you know, with the right attention to detail and the right mindset, and maybe doing something a little bit different.
I came away with the sense that Americans like sound bites, and I recorded 10 sound bites from the whole of the conference, and I've got them here, and I'll just run through them because they're quite good. The first one: don't do the cool stuff first. You'll fail, never do it again. And I think that relates to kind of buying all the fancy kit and then and finding it doesn't really work. That came from John Kemp. If you don't have a spade in your truck, you're not a farmer. That came from Steve Jeff from Cover Crops. Don't address symptoms, fix problems. And I think we can relate to that. There was some comments on using plants as indicators. So if you've got black grass, don't just aim to spray it off. Understand why you've got black grass. Don't commit 50% of effort and expect 100% result. Came from Brendan Rocky, the potato farmer in Colorado. You can conserve or regulate soil moisture without a cover crop, or you can't. You cannot conserve or regulate soil moisture without a cover crop. Why pray for rain when you have not prepared to receive it? And again, that's to do with soil cover and making sure that your soil is protected. The most important thing in system change is a mirror, came from Adam Daughtry. The silver bullet that we all keep mentioning is between your ears, again from Adam Daughtry. Cover crops can make a good farmer better and a bad farmer worse, from Steve Goff. And what happens on farm stays on farm. And I think that was really a really good one that came from Brendan Rocky again, in terms of nutrient losses, soil losses, and so on. Whatever you do on the farm, just keep it on the farm. So those are the 10 sound bites from me. Russ, I suppose the biggest question on everyone's lips after hearing this podcast is, what are we going to do if we lose glyphosate? They were quite insistent that burn down and burn off is necessary in the US. If we lose it here in Europe and in the UK, how could we get around that?
I mean, it's the million-dollar question. I think of whenever I spoke at an event last year, I reckon it was a question I was probably asked invariably all the way through. And there is no doubt is that, you know, our system revolves and relies quite heavily on glyphosate, as does the same for a lot of those growers. But I think it's the same whether you're a conventional farmer as well. And if you said to a lot of conventional farmers who were cultivating that they were going to lose glyphosate, it would be equally difficult for those growers as well. So I think it's a massive challenge. It would worry me be great if we didn't have the product. Yeah, we can do stuff, you know, if we're growing cover crops and you've got tall weeds, you can sort of crimp them. That's a good way of destroying stuff. But unfortunately for these sort of grass-based weeds like black grass, that doesn't work. So we still need a product like glyphosate that's going to work. And I have seen some work somewhere that there may be something in the pipeline in future, but whether it'll ever come to fruition, I don't know. But you shouldn't pin your hopes on something that might not come to market. But I hope there's common sense that revolves around glyphosate and it comes up for re-registration again, because, you know, for so many people, it's absolutely vital to, you know, making the whole system work.
Okay. Well, with that, Russ, we'll wrap things up. Just leaves me to say thank you very much for speaking to us today, and we'll hope to see you soon.
No problem. Thanks, Harry.
Cheers.
That was AHDB's Harry Henderson discussing regenerative agriculture with farmer Russell McKenzie. If you'd like to learn more about no-till on the plains, you can visit their website at www.notill.org. If you have 5 minutes to spare, please visit the AHDB website and complete our spring planting and variety survey. The survey provides an estimate of the area of cereals and oilseed rape intended for harvest in 2020 in Great Britain. AHDB will use the data to support levy payers in their marketing decisions. You can fill out the form by visiting springplanting.ahdb.org.uk or visiting the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds website at ahdb.org.uk. www.sellersguide.co.uk/cereals-oilseeds. I'm Tom Hebbert. Thanks for listening.